This meeting is now in session. My name is Angela Ryder, and I am the chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, January 23rd, 2023 at 9 a.m., and I'm calling this meeting to order. Folks, on this video conference, please mute yourselves until it is your opportunity to speak or you have been called upon to eliminate any distractions of background noise. The chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in the executive session may remain in the boardroom and when the board withdraws to the chambers for the executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in open session. In accordance with open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Individuals found violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly, and if the disorderly conduct continues, the person may be removed from the meeting. Executive Director, Mr. Overton, will you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Present.
Board Member DeRoost?
Present.
Vice Tuna?
Present.
And Chair Ryder?
Present.
You have four present, one vacancy.
Thank you. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may make an open call to the public during the public meeting that is subject to a reasonable time, which is 3 minutes. Place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issues within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss any legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask the staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be put on a future agenda. Please be advised that the call to public is not an opportunity for testimony for cases that are being reviewed by the board. And do we have a call to public? I do see Michelle Cordero. You have your hand raised. Please go ahead and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, Michelle Cordero, AFAS Massage Education. I am seeking clarification on some processes for licensing. We were notified by a few students who noticed that their license expiration dates on the State Board website are listed as 2 years from the date that the license went into effect. The expiration date has always been on their therapist's birthday. Some of the licensees received their license with their birthday as their expiration date, only to see a new 2-year expiration date on the website. They were not notified of this change in the date. When asked for clarification for the change, one student received the following message from the info at email address. Quote, the State Board has been advised by its assigned Assistant Attorney General that licenses may not be issued in excess of 24 months per state statute. This became the board policy as of autumn 2022, end quote. This answer contradicts ARS section 32-4225, line A, that states, quote, except as provided in section 324301, a license issued pursuant to this chapter is subject to renewal every other year on the licensee's birthday and expires unless renewed, end quote. If the term cannot, in fact, exceed 24 months, changing existing license expiration dates without notifying the license holder is cause for concern. License holders need to plan to take their continuing education classes and also submit the renewal before their expiration date. Not knowing when that is or finding out they have months left to plan may cause an excessive burden. I have looked up some of our alumni on the website, and everyone licensed in 2022 and even some in 2021 have had their expiration date changed without notice. One student who was issued a license on December 3rd, 2021, now has an expiration date of December 3rd, 2023. I contacted him to find out what it says on his license he received in 2021, and it states May 8th, 2024, his birthday. He didn't have a clue that his date was now changed. I request consideration for the expiration date returning to the birthday as described in the aforementioned statute. I would also like to request a review of the application process. We have been notified that several students' applications have not been received, even though we are able to produce a copy of the application that is sent to the applicant's email immediately following submitting the application on the website and verifying their email address. Most recently, one of our alumni received her FD 258 card and transcripts in the mail with a stamp saying no application, as her documents were rejected due to no application, yet she was showing as pending on the website. So we have to send in her documents again, delaying the background check process even more. Thank you so much for your time and allowing me to speak today, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Michelle. Do we have any other call to public? And we do not. Board staff, if we could please make note of the previous call to public, I would appreciate that. Next on our agenda, declaration of the board member conflicts of interest. The board members should have had an opportunity to review the board packet for today. And are there any conflicts of interest? There are not. Board members, Executive Director Tom Ogerton has set out the conflict of interest form for the new year. Please be sure to review it and sign it to Mr. Ogerton as soon as possible if you haven't already. While we're on this, Mr. Ogerton, will you please go over the conflict of interest form with the board members just for clarification as well for the public and the press? With the board members at this time and review the expectations and policies as board members and the conflict of interest.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. The first time the massage board actually did the annual form for the board members and the staff was last year. Prior to that time, this was not a policy and procedure of the state board. The purpose, of course, of Arizona Revised Statute Title 38501A is it applies to all public officers and employees, so therefore all board members and all employees of the state board. And this is now required on an annual basis. This was also one of the findings in the Auditor General's report, although they acknowledge the use of the annual disclosure forms and signatures and submission. They have also requested a language change in the form that we're using, and that change needs to be submitted to the Auditor General at the six-month review, which is due to them January the 31st of this year. Public officer is defined as any elected or appointed member of a public agency established by charter, ordinance, resolution, state constitution, or state statute. In addition to the annual forms under the new board that was appointed by the governor in the fall of 2021, we have added the requirement of the board responding to an agenda item at each state board meeting. So between the annual disclosure forms and the regular inclusion of this at each meeting, the public can be assured that the board is not only responding in writing, but also responding monthly to an affirmation when a question is called on. Did you have any more questions on that, Madam Chair?
Not at this time. Thank you. Next, Executive Director Tom Ogerton, you're up again. We have annual elections for the State Board of Officers, and we will be doing nominations and discussion with roll call vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to provide a bit of background, it's required to have officers elected annually at a state board, and this board elected its officers when it was first established, and then reaffirmed them in January of last year. Although we have a quorum of three and a membership of only four with a vacancy, we will be doing another nomination process this morning for officers, followed by a motion of a second. And then if there's additional nominations, we would take those. And then just to be on the record, we'll do a roll call vote on the names that have been nominated. Are there any questions of the board members before we start this morning? Okay. So the floor is open for nominations for the position of state board chair. Are there any nominations from the floor?
This is a board person, Tapscott, and I don't see any reason to change things at this point. I've been very happy with the way the board's been run. And I nominate, again, Angelo Ryder for the chairperson of the board.
We have a nomination. Do we have a second to the nomination?
This is board member Duritz, and I would second that nomination.
Okay, we have a nomination this second. Is there additional nominations for the position of chair of the state board? All right, seeing none, we're going to close the nominations, and we're going to go for a roll call vote. A vote of aye is an affirmation of the motion. A vote of nay is obviously not. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder, current Chair Ryder?
Aye.
By a vote of 4 ayes, 1 vacant, we have reelected the Chair, Angela Ryder, for the new term. If we can now just for a moment take nominations for the Vice Chair, again, the same process. Are there nominations for State Board Vice Chair?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I nominate Mariah Moon for that position.
And I'd like to second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and we have a second. Are there additional nominations for Vice Chair? Seeing none, we're going to call the vote. Roll call again. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon? Vice Chair Moon, I know you're with us telephonically and your connection may be...
I'm here.
Okay. I wasn't sure that was reluctance or a bad phone connection. By a vote of 4 ayes and 1 vacant, you have approved the retention of Vice Chair Moon as the State Board Vice Chair. So, Madam Chair, I return the floor back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Augerton. All right. Board members should have had an opportunity to review the open meeting minutes from October 31st, 2022, November 28th, 2022, and December 19th, 2022. Are there any discussions regarding these open minute meetings? And there are not. I move to accept the meeting minutes from October 31st, 2022, November 28th, 2022, and December 19th, 2022.
And this is Board Member DeRoots, and I will second that for all three.
And a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
4 ayes, 1 vacancy.
And the motion passes. The meeting minutes for these dates are approved. Today, we do have a presenter, Mr. Kevin Sneddon, who is a director of the Industry Relations Federation of Massage Therapy Boards. And Mr. Sneddon is going to be basically providing a briefing of industry issues for us from the FSMTB. The board members will also have an opportunity to ask questions. These questions will only be provided by the board members and not from others that are on the call. Mr. Kevin Sneddon, are you on the call with us today?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
So give me a moment here. We'll get... some screen share going. And can you see the welcome slide okay?
We can. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. So, Mr. Augerton, Madam Chair, honorable members of the board, state staff, other guests, Happy New Year. Good morning. And thank you for giving FSMTB this opportunity. As was noted, we are going to chat about some of the challenges or opportunities, as it were, that we see across the national landscape. And we're also going to take a look back and briefly review some of the accomplishments and things that transpired in 2022. Alas, 2022, it still may be premature to talk about a return to normalcy post-pandemic, but at least we began to see a return to in-person events. And that was no different for the staff at FSMTV. We were back on the road and in attendance at multiple national profession events. In February, staff attended the AMTA, American Massage Therapy Association School Summit. And in conjunction with it, we hosted a three-hour information session for schools. In April, our executive director, Dr. Deborah Persinger, was a keynote presenter at the annual conference of the National Association of State Administrators and Supervisors of Private Schools. And I thought our organization had a long name. Also in April, staff presented at the Texas Administrators of Continuing Education's annual conference in Texas. And we participated in the Association and Bodywork Massage Professionals School Forum. In June, our staff participated in panel discussions at the Florida State Massage Therapy Association's convention and trade show. And again, we hosted a school information session in conjunction with that event. In December, Dr. Persinger, our executive director, also presented at the Council of State Governments National Conference. The Job Task Analysis Survey was launched in February of 2022. Job Task Analysis, or JTA, is administered every 3 to 5 years in an effort to ensure, seeking to ensure, that the MLEX reflects current practice. In addition, a separate survey followed the JTA, asking massage and bodywork therapists to provide information about their experiences with sexual harassment by clients. There were over 5,400 responses to the job task analysis. Also announced in 2022, MBLEX candidates may begin to see three option multiple choice questions in addition to the four option multiple choice questions on the massage and bodywork examination, licensure examination. The FSMTV, along with psychometricians who are monitoring current standardized testing performance, will not introduce changes that could harm a candidate's ability to pass the MBLEX. Instead, we continue to explore ways to assist all of our candidates in demonstrating their knowledge and ability to practice safely and competently. A press release went out noting that FSMTB had initiated litigation in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Texas against Footy Rudy Development, Inc., its officers, and other participating parties. This litigation was initiated by FSMTB alleging copyright and trade secret infringement related to the intellectual property interest of the massage and bodywork licensing examination. From our resources standpoint, for students preparing to sit for the MBLEX, the FSMTB official MBLEX study guide was released both in Spanish and English in an e-version, and that's available at the FSMTB website. The other resource available with FSMTB, MBLEX Check Online Readiness Assessment or Practice Exam, is now available to schools for bulk purchasing at a discounted rate for those approved schools that wish to buy multiple attempts for their students. It's also noteworthy that for calendar year 2022, the first time test taker pass rate in the state of Arizona was 79.1%, compared to the national average of 71.4%. We saw both of those numbers rise by approximately 3 percentage points over calendar year 2021. As the slide says, whatever you can do, we can do better together. In May of 2022, FSMTB hosted its Member Board Executive Summit. Topics included the interagency collaboration, massage therapy education, development of the Massage Therapy Licensing Compact, and the Massage Therapy Licensing Database. This was the first face-to-face meeting for the FSMTB MBE Summit since the beginning of the COVID pandemic. September 1, we saw the release of a new resource to combat human trafficking and fraud in higher education. The FSMTB Executive Director, Deborah Persinger, and Lorna Chandler with the Colorado Department of Higher Education co-authored a toolkit for identifying human trafficking in higher education. This is a practical guide for state authorizers to identify and take action on human trafficking in higher education institutions. You can find a link to the toolkit at the FSMTB website under the News and Media tab. Any similarities to my caricature there and Mr. Augerton are strictly coincidental. And in October, FSMTB hosted the 2023 annual meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina. We had two new members join the FSMTB Board of Directors, Mr. Mike Aramendez, the Executive Director of the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, and Mr. Keith Warren, the Executive Director of the Alabama Board of Massage Therapy. In addition, this year, FSMTB did something a little bit different and provided a donation to Dahlia Grove, a nonprofit social enterprise in North Carolina, seeking to empower and employ women survivors of human trafficking, domestic violence, and sexual exploitation. The FSMTB annual report was released in November of 2022. You can read it in its entirety at the FSMTB website. A couple of highlights there. Currently, there are 46 states and U.S. territories that use the MBLEX. Just over 20,000 candidates take the MBLEX annually. Our membership is currently 45 state and territory regulatory boards. And FSMTB hosted 11 virtual membership events for our members throughout calendar year 2022. Looking ahead, we're only 3 weeks into 2023, and it is already a wonderfully busy time for FSMTB. Later this week, FSMTB staff members will be presenting at the FARB Forum, FARB being the Federation of Association of Regulatory Boards. Earlier this month, the final language for the model legislation for the Interstate Massage Compact, or IMPACT, was released. The IMPACT website was also launched, noted at the top of the slide, massagecompact.org, and FSMTB hosted a virtual membership event earlier this month on final legislation and next steps for the compact. You're likely aware that January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Earlier this month, FSMTB staff and two members of the FSMTB Board of Directors attended the National Convening Massage Trafficking and Illicit Massage event in California. Looking ahead for 2023, in April 27th and 28th, FSMTB will be hosting the Member Board Executive Summit. So the event is intended for the state's senior staff person, easy for me to say, from each of our member boards. This year, we have a unique track that's going to go on in parallel. So the programming will include two tracks, one for board administrators and a second track for for state investigators and inspectors. The meeting agenda and the registration forms should go out by the end of this month. And please note, similar to our annual meeting, for this meeting, FSMTB does cover the travel cost for the executive staff person to attend, and will be covering the travel expenses for one investigator or state inspector as well. So you'll get to have two representatives at this year's meeting. And in September, FSMTB will be hosting its annual meeting this year in San Diego, September 28th through 30th. And as I just referenced, FSMTB, as part of your membership to the organization, FSMTB will cover the travel expenses for one member to attend from your state to be the delegate and the voice and the vote at the annual meeting. Some of the challenges that the profession faced or saw in 2022 continue or are back now at the beginning of 2023. So deregulation is still a thing. It is still out there, and there are still some states that have concerns about language being moved forward. Online or distance education, your board is familiar with it, as are many. Initially, because of the pandemic, there was a lot of changes made, in many cases emergency orders or temporary actions, allowing for schools to continue to operate during the pandemic and offer distance education. Some states have made changes in rule allowing for distance education. There are many states that have not yet addressed the topic. And some of the challenges include, as you all are probably aware, transcripts that come from schools many times do not identify the delivery method of the training and education. So we still see challenges with and delays in the licensure process for individuals that may have attended schools remotely or through distance education. Universal licensing recognition. We've seen some challenges with, in most cases, it's a matter of, if someone is trying to come to your state, does their credential meet or exceed the requirements of that same credential within your state? Some states are beginning to see individuals present national certification documents and attempting to present that as an equivalency. And so I think it's important to note that there's a significant difference between certification and licensure. Being nationally certified does not give me the right to legally practice in any state, let alone nationally across the country. It's an advanced credential. It shows that an individual has the education and has passed the requirements, possibly an examination, to obtain that credential, and then the ongoing requirements to maintain it. The opposite is true for a license. Licensure, as regulators, your role is public protection. Does the individual have the base knowledge to be able to safely work on the general public? And if so, in obtaining a license, they can legally practice in that state. They don't need the national certification necessarily. To add to the confusion, we have at least one state who calls their credential a certification, and it's a voluntary document. It is not a state-required credential to have to practice in the state. Yet we do see people attempting to present that to other states as equivalent to the license in that state. And then we continue to see some challenges related to attempts to lower educational standards. So whether it's 500 hours or 700 hours, considering lowering those numbers, and possibly even looking to create tiered systems so that people would be allowed to practice with fewer hours of education, possibly with a more limited scope than a full licensed massage therapist. Lastly, I also had an inquiry from the board related to individuals and their presentation of a past letter or their MBLEX results. So it's important to note when an individual leaves a test center, Pearson VUE provides them with an unofficial score report, and it says that right on the document. So the good news is they know immediately after their exam attempt whether they passed the examination or not. Official examination results are only transmitted to state regulatory boards, and we send them to the state that the individual identified on their examination application as the state they intend to seek licensure in. We have a process, and we have primary contacts with each regulatory board, and we send these jurisdictional reports out to the states. That is the only official recording of an individual's MBLEX results. So if someone is presenting you their unofficial score report, just know the ability to do a cut and paste or to fraudulently make a document is there. Likewise, FSMTB does not issue the student, the individual that took the exam, official results. If they want to move to a different state or they would like their results sent to additional states, there's a form that can be completed on the FSMTB website. And the same process is followed. We would include those results in the jurisdictional report that the official send, with FSMTB being the source of truth to provide that information. So that was a lot of information in a short period of time. Again, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Kevin, thank you so much. That was very informative, and thank you for kind of completing your presentation with the unofficial and official test scores, because I think it's important for our board and our board investigator to be aware, and our license processors, that because I have seen unofficial documents provided in the licensing application, and so I think it's important to know that those aren't what we need to in order to process an application appropriately. How many states that are you aware of now that do not accept voluntary certifications from any state as far as trying to acquire a license? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of any state that would accept a certification document as the equivalency of the license in their state. I'm not saying there might not be a one-off out there, and what I'll do is I'll make a note to myself, and I'll get with our government relations team, and we'll follow up with Mr. Arbitron accordingly.
Very good. I know you had mentioned the national certification exam, and I know that I actually had taken the national certification exam back in 1994. And I know that some states require that as a part of their licensing process. But that's very different than a voluntary certification, correct?
Yes, ma'am. And so a few years back, FSMTB and NCVTMB made a joint announcement that their national cert exam would no longer be offered for licensure purposes. That being said, there are states similar to what you referenced, and I am a licensed massage therapist, so I'm going to use my home state of Missouri in my example. The MBLEX is the primary licensure exam. It's the only examination at the national level specifically for licensure purposes. That's why it came about. National cert is a higher credential, and therefore a higher level of knowledge is measured to obtain that credential. And it was one of the motivating factors to the state regulatory boards directing FSMTB to develop a licensure exam. So in my home state of Missouri, while the vast majority of people are maybe sitting for the MBLEX, if you look at the language the MCB exam is still listed in rule. So it may be that a person took the exam previously and a state would still accept that passing exam result for the examination requirement in their state. So it's not requiring that one be nationally certified. It's that there are states that still have language in place where they may take a passing result from that exam.
Sure. And I believe that I've seen that in our statutes, our rules and statutes as well, in a roundabout sort of way. I have lots of questions, so I'll give the other board members an opportunity in just a moment, and maybe I'll also be asking the same questions that they want to ask. Could you tell us more about the education verification system on FSMTB, and are boards or folks are able to determine if an individual has passed the MLEX exam from the website?
Great question. So we'll start with the Education Verification Center, or what we call the EVC. So state-approved massage therapy training programs can reach out to FSMTB and request a user account in the EVC. So we cross-check that school is recognized in the state that it's located in. And once they're granted access, when a student from a program applies for the MBLEX, they're required to identify the school that they attended. That school then is notified that they have a student pending education verification. The school goes into their dashboard. They can click on their students one at a time, and they're attesting that individual attended the program. They also enter a start date of the training and education, as well as the end date or anticipated end date. And the reason I put it that way, currently, completion of the massage therapy training program is not a requirement to sit for the exam. So while they must have training and education in all content areas of the examination, they don't have to have graduated yet. The school also has an option. It's currently not mandatory, but they can also upload a copy of the student's education record. Once that's done, that moves that student's MBLEX application to the next phase. They've applied, they've paid, and now the school has verified their education. That application goes into final processing then. There is no place for regulatory board at this time to get on our website to try to find out if a person has a passing score or not. And it's one of the reasons, back to source of truth, if an individual wants their report to go or their results to go to another state, or even if it's the first time, we securely send those results directly to that state. That being said, we do have Matilda, the Massage Therapy Licensure Database, and as more member boards sign on and upload their data to Matilda, more information will become available to our member boards. But you'll have to participate in Matilda to get access to the database.
Very good. How does FSMTB vet schools to make sure that they're accredited or they have an accredited program to allow people to fit for the MBLEX?
That's a loaded question, Madam Chair.
Of course.
That's one of the biggest challenges, not only for our organization, but across the country, right? There is no standardized requirements on what makes an approved school. You use the term accredited. Well, okay, by who? Which accrediting bodies are going to be recognized in a particular state? And I would venture to say the vast majority of our states don't require accreditation. That being said, but still, I'm going to stop here for a second. Usually it's a separate body that does the accrediting. However, we do have some, whether it's Department of Higher Education, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We have state agencies that have a jurisdictional authority to approve or recognize schools, and in some cases, they call that approval an accreditation. So, fortunately, we have very good working relationships for the vast majority of state regulators, whether that's the Massage Therapy Board or another state agency that approves schools. We reach out to you. We reach out to our contacts at the state level. I'm going to use our dear friends to the north, the state of Washington. The staff there does an amazing job. And because action could potentially be taken on the school at any board meeting, usually within a week to 10 days after a board meeting, I receive an updated spreadsheet of the schools in their state. So we do our best to maintain active and current records on the schools, but we're dependent upon the state agencies to get that information.
Very good. And one final question for you. Is the MLEX exam offered in other languages besides English?
Yes, ma'am, it is. So shortly after the MLEX was in place, our member board in Puerto Rico put forward a resolution requesting that the examination be translated into Spanish, which is a requirement there, that licensure exams must be available in English and Spanish. That resolution was moved forward, and the MLEX is currently available in English and Spanish.
Very good. Thank you. Now I am done with all of my questions, so I would like to invite the other board members to also ask questions.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I think there's hardly any questions left. thank you sincerely. You covered, like, everything just about. Kevin, I just have a quick question. So you've got the MLEX offered in English and Spanish now. Any plans for additional languages, or those have to be proposed to your organization, or?
Yes, sir. Exactly, Mr. Tapscott. So we have a resolution process at FSMTB. Tennessee, a few years back, put a resolution forward to our membership asking that a human trafficking task force be created, and that group look at the prevalence of massage or of human trafficking in the massage therapy profession, the impact of human trafficking on the massage therapy profession, and what steps FSMTB and or state regulators might take in combating human trafficking. This takes place at our annual meeting. So we will send out a call for resolutions. Any of our members can send in and propose a resolution. If it goes before the membership, there are pros and cons, and then the membership takes it to vote. So that would be the device used. We as staff, we don't have the authority to say, hey, I've got an idea, let's do X, Y, Z, right? The work that we do is on behalf of you and at the directive of our membership.
I love that. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Kevin. This is Vice Chair Moon. No questions, but I just appreciate your continued support, not only for awareness of human trafficking, but also their response, and just being a really good partner to us in Arizona. So thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. And that's a great segue. So thanks for setting this up for me. In April, this year's 2023 Association and Bodywork and Massage Professionals School Forum is going to be hosted in Phoenix. So we're coming to your backyard. And in conjunction with that, right now we're looking at some of the initial phases or steps in our process to host one of our school information sessions. So we will send out an invitation to every single recognized school in the state of Arizona, invite them to a location, and then we kind of do a deep dive. We talk about the MLEX, we talk about national things that are going on, and then we also are really good listeners. What are schools seeing? What are they faced with, right? Because they may consider themselves competitors on one hand, but at the end of the day, they have the same challenges, and that's butts and chairs. How do we get students in our doors and how do we help them be successful on the examination and navigating the licensure pathway. So details will follow. I will also follow up with Mr. Augerton. Sometimes there's board meetings. The massage board has meetings in conjunction. And we're happy to support you any way that we can. But we will be in Phoenix at the end of April.
Thank you. Mr. Roos, do you have any questions or comments for Kevin?
Thanks. I don't have any questions. I actually learned a lot, took a lot of notes. So thank you so much for all the information. And again, thank you so much as somebody who works in the human trafficking field. I just want to thank you for highlighting that this month is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and I appreciate that and your continued good work. So thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Wonderful. Board staff, Mr. Augerton, do you have any questions that you would like to ask?
Madam Chair, no, thank you. Although Kevin did mention something which the board can think about and let me know later. With their arrival here in April, you could do a board meeting on May the 1st if you wanted to have some combined relationship with the forum that the Federation's doing. Or the other option would be to post publicly the board's attendance, even if it's virtual, to comply with open meeting, if you wanted to attend virtually or in person the program with the Federation in the end of April. So a couple of options to think about.
Wonderful. Thank you. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today and the plethora of information that you've provided. We appreciate you. If you have to take off, you are welcome. You are also welcome to stay.
Yep. Thank you for your time, and truly thank you all for what you do. We appreciate you.
Thank you. At this time, before we move forward, I would like to request a 5-minute comfort break. We are back in session. It is Monday, January 23rd at 9:53 a.m., and we are proceeding. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. We currently have a vacancy in formal interviews, and we do not have any formal hearings. We do have investigative review, so we'll begin with that. This is case number 22-285, licensed massage therapist 24771, Christopher Esteen. This is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing, and the board may consider a cease and desist letter and refer the matter to other law enforcement. We do have, I understand that this case is under investigation. Is Christopher Esteen present at this meeting? Okay. Senior Investigator David Elson, can you please provide a summary of the complaint against Christopher Esteen once again, who is currently under investigation by the Criminal Investigations Division, SVU Goodyear Police Department?
Yes, ma'am. Right now, myself and Assistant Attorney General Shameless Monahan are collaborating with Goodyear PD. We don't want to do anything to mess up their criminal trial, so therefore we need a continuance because we are unable to obtain a victim or an unredacted police report or anything at this time, and the officer is not able to testify due to the fact he hasn't testified in all the preliminary matters in the criminal court.
Understood. So that being said, we continue this case until further notice, until the investigation is complete. How do we proceed with that?
Madam Chair, board members, if you would like, you can continue the matter and wait until there's some public documents available. It's my understanding that Mr. Esteen is not responding to the board. But we do know that his agreement is that he's under house arrest and he is not allowed to see clients at his home either. So he's got a pretty tight leash on him. And as Investigator Elson said, we, you know, just defer to the criminal investigation until such a time as we have some public documents available.
Perfect. That is comforting to know that he is not able to practice on anybody, including in his home. So thank you for that. I move to continue this particular case to a future date once the more information is available to us to proceed.
This is Board Member DeRuth, and I will second that motion.
And can we do a roll call vote, please, Mr. Auberton?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member DeRuth?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes, 1 vacant.
The motion passes, and that concludes this particular case. Before we proceed with the license applications requiring public board review, I would like to move to go into executive session to obtain legal advice from our Assistant Attorney General, Seamus Monahan.
Vice Chair Moon, I'll second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Auberton.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRuth?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes. Madam Chair, each of you have received an email with a link, and if you can check that to make sure you have it, then you can move there.
Okay. We will excuse ourselves to executive session. Those on the call can stay in the boardroom until we return. It is Monday, January 23rd, 10:16 a.m., and we are back from executive session. Let's so we are going to be going over the license applications requiring public board review. Our first case is case number 22-230, and this is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing. The board may consider a motion, and all parties, please be advised that the board requires you to be on camera, unmuted, as well as your representing counsel. Is the applicant, Anna Wang, present in this meeting? Okay. Senior Investigator David Elson, can you please provide a summary of your investigation of this case?
Yes, Madam Chair. On June 1st, 2022, applicant applied for Arizona licensure through reciprocity based on her NCBTMB training. On her application, applicant disclosed that on May 26, 2005, she was arrested and convicted for prostitution in Los Angeles, California. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation, and that on in 2009, she applied for an order of dismissal, which was granted for the conviction of prostitution, dismissing it altogether.
Okay, thank you. I understand that the arrest for prostitution had taken place almost 18 years ago. So I'd like to hear from the other board members regarding this kind of violation of moral turpitude. Based on information that was provided for us by the investigator.
And board members, I'd just like to clarify with the investigator, was it a prostitution charge or was it a conviction?
It was a prostitution conviction because they asked, in their order for dismissal in 2009, they asked for a dismissal of the prostitution charge conviction.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is Board Member Tapscott. And then was it dismissed, the conviction?
Yeah, it was dismissed in 2009.
Okay.
4 years after the conviction.
Understood. Okay. So what we're looking at is something, though, that's 18 years old and has been dismissed for some reason or another.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, I think that's an important consideration for all of us to on the board here. I'd love to hear from other board members, but I too have, I do feel like 18 years is a long time ago.
I agree. I think what came up for me, was it a conviction or a charge, and the dismissal. I would love to hear from Anna Wing on just the circumstances around it, if possible, before we make a decision.
I think that's wise. I think that's wise. Would you like to make a motion on it? Or Ms. Moon, do you have anything that you would like to add?
No, I agree with Mr. Roos.
I can make a motion. So I make a motion that we postpone and invite Anna Wing to come and speak to the board before we make a decision on this license.
I would like to second that motion. And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Augerton.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
The motion passes. This case will be moved to our next meeting, and we will invite Ms. Anna Wang to attend the meeting and answer any questions the board members may have. That concludes this case. For cases D2 through D10, board members, these are all application reviews, Investigator, yes, David Elson, I was actually just going to call upon you.
The first one is not. One has been to the other.
Okay, very good. So we will go ahead and review. That's case number 22-286.
Correct.
Okay, very good. We'll go ahead and follow through with that one. So this is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing, and the board may consider motions from the board members accepting or denying a license application. All parties, please be advised that the board requires you to be on camera and unmuted, as well as your representing counsel. Is the applicant for case number 22-286 available at this meeting? Okay. Senior Investigator David Elson, will you please provide a summary of your investigation on this case?
Yes, Madam Chair. On May 10, 2022, applicant applied for regular initial Arizona licensure. On October 1, 2022, I called the applicant to advise her fingerprints had been rejected and found applicant was unable to speak English, although on her application she swore English was her native language, therefore falsifying her application. Based on this, the board conducted an investigation and found the same, that English was not her native language.
And board investigator, did she admit that to you?
She did, in writing, in an email that's in the report, and on the phone.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from board members? And do we have?
I apologize. Please. And just for the board, just to flesh this out a little, investigator, when you called, were you able to speak with her?
I was able to speak with her for a little while, and then she tried to put somebody else on the phone. And I told them I could not speak to them involving her case. And then she sent me an email where she said she's not fluent in English, but she learns more every day.
Okay, thank you.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I have a question. I don't know if it can be answered. Do we have a legal definition of what native language means? Because I'm hearing it, fluency and native language being used as synonyms. And I have students that English is probably their native language, but they aren't really fluent at it because of a learning disability or something. So I'm just curious, do we have a definition to go by legally?
The definition is it your native language? Because it follows the country where you're from, and then it asks you what your native language is. Is English, and I don't think it says native language. I think it says, is English your, does somebody have the application? I want to make sure that we're looking at the right language.
Yep. I'll get it for you. The question says, is English your native language?
No, yep. I apologize. So yes, it would be where you're from. Is that the language that you grew up speaking?
Got it. Kind of your first language.
The issue here is for the board to determine you have a fraudulent application. You have an email stating it was a fraudulent application. So again, you can continue it and discuss it with her, or you can make a decision today.
She was notified of the meeting in the original phone call of today's meeting.
Are there any motions or any other questions?
Can we deny the application and ask her to take an English test?
We could. That could be a motion.
You could deny the application based on providing false information to the board in the application.
Allow her to reapply?
Yep. And she could reapply after taking the exam or just reapply later.
This is Vice Chair Moon. I think that's what I'm struggling with, of not stating honest factual information on the application.
Agreed.
I agree. And also with the written statement saying that it's not her native first language, English, I think that that is supportive of what we're moving towards. I agree with you.
All right. Based on the information presented at this meeting and the findings of fact and statute and rule violations identified in the investigative report, ARS 32-4253, I move to deny the licensure of this particular case 22-286 based on violations of falsifying the application. You're muted, Mr. Monahan.
So that would be 4253A2?
Yes, correct.
Thank you.
This is Vice Chairman. I'll second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes.
The motion passes. This license is denied. The applicant can reapply after they've taken the TOEFL or TOEIC exam, and we'll go from there. And Senior Investigator David Elson, please correct me if I'm wrong. Cases D3 through D10 are all applications that are voluntary certifications. Is that correct?
That is correct. They don't hold licenses in other states.
Okay. At this time, I would like to open the floor to the other board members to discuss this based on some of the information we've received from Mr. Kevin Sneddon earlier. Please go ahead.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I mean, I have concerns about what certification in California means and does it meet reciprocity standards. However, I don't know, and I think we need more information to continue to make those decisions. So, I mean, I'm kind of have two thoughts here that I would love to hear input from the rest of you on. One is that I definitely think we need just more information about what the certification process is in California. Does it kind of meet what we would consider general licensing standards, things like that, reach out to California and such. But my second consideration is, and I don't know where I stand on this, is we have approved licenses like this in the past. Do we continue to do so until we know otherwise? And do we even have good reason to hold up these licenses based on what we've done in the past? And I don't know where I stand on that. You can, one wrong does not mean we should continue it either. I would love to hear input on that as well.
Sure. Mr. Tapscott, thank you for bringing those points up too. And I'd like to lean on the board staff a little bit because I want to make sure that we are within the time frame of the licensing period if we do continue these cases to the next one to offer us enough time to do a little bit more research on the voluntary certification, making sure that it meets the requirements of our reciprocity license.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
The quickest way to answer your question for you and the board is that right now the state is not issuing any initial massage licenses because of the level one fingerprint card situation. So, as we've discussed here before, I don't want to belabor it. If you take the 258 requirement, even if it was submitted on January the 2nd, everyone has a 90-day wait for the national background clearance to come through, and we're hoping for the level one to be done before March 1st, March 2nd of this year. So no one is being delayed on this or any other issue until we get the level one card. Secondly, maybe it would be a useful exercise in the future in another meeting to take a blank application and walk through what the state is asking in the form versus what it's getting. The form is organic. It's been changed many, many times since the last board to the current board. It is a legal affidavit. The information provided, in fact, is held truthful by virtue of the signature of the person responding to it. But by the same token, the licensing application and the ability under current statutory authority to protect the public and provide credible review is completely nonsensical. So, and maybe we can discuss that later, but maybe what you might want to do at a future board meeting, and you guys can discuss it at the end, is take a blank application, look what the state's attempting to solicit, because even if you satisfy each of yourselves with regard to reciprocity, all we have to do is turn around and use universal. And universal is reciprocity with phony addresses. So I can make that one very easy for you. Thanks, Senator.
Thank you very much. Other board members?
This is Vice Chair Moon. Just kind of to comment off of Mr. Tapscott's comment around, you know, do we continue on? I think with any due diligence of assessing that something just doesn't seem right, I think this is the time, instead of saying, well, this is what we've always done, and to continue, and kind of just honor that we need to do and have some time to investigate and explore further would be my kind of recommendation or push.
Thank you.
I agree. Yeah, this is Board Member Drews, and I agree with Mariah. I think that just continuing to do what we've always done is dangerous. So when we learn something new, we definitely should pause and look into a little bit more. So I agree.
Wonderful. I'm glad we're all in agreement here. I would like to move to postpone these cases of D3 through D10 to our next board meeting for application reviews to allow the board members time and the board staff to do a little bit of research on the difference between voluntary certification and if it meets the standards of our reciprocity license here in Arizona.
And just to clarify, board members, the staff will put together that information for you. Don't do any outside investigations, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify.
I appreciate that.
No problem.
Vice Chairman, I'll second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
The motion passes. Let me finish this. The application reviews from D3 through D10 will be postponed until our next board meeting. Investigator Helston?
Going forward, I already have more applications that are trying to squeak in using their California certification as a license. How do we want to move forward with those? I mean, I can do reports and put them on the next meeting to go with these. I'm not sure how you want to go forward with them. They're too new. They didn't make it to this meeting.
I believe we could probably just add them to the next agenda.
Okay.
All right. Next is our board investigation report. So once again, Senior Investigator David Elson, could you please provide us a monthly investigation activity?
Yes, Madam Chair. The between last meeting and this meeting, we had a total of 17 new cases. Of those 17, 6 were closed administratively, but because they were outside the statute jurisdiction for us to move forward with. And we received 47 new fingerprint cards and didn't receive any back yet from DPS. So we have 47 outstanding from DPS.
Thank you.
No update on the, we spoke with DPS a week or so ago, and there's no update on, everybody's still in limbo waiting on the FBI.
Thank you. Next up is our Executive Director, Mr. Thomas Augerton, giving us a report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's eliminate number B because the investigator just covered that. We still haven't heard anything back from DPS. Starting with A, I met last week with the Auditor General's investigative team on the board, and I have to complete our report on January the 31st. And I will get you each a copy of that formal response to the Auditor General right prior to the 31st for your review. And then my suggestion to the chair and the board members would be to have them on the agenda for the next meeting. And by then, you'll see what our submission is, and they will also have had time to respond to the contents of the response from the board and any suggested edits or omissions or other issues that they want to address would have been received by us, which I can provide to you, and then the corrections that we made would also be available for the February meeting. There were 19 recommendations, but with the subset, it comes out to 27. I sent each of you a link to the Joint Committees of Reference legislative meeting that was held on the board audit. For those of you over a certain age, which I am, traditionally in the history of the state when it came to 90-10 regulatory boards, the time period typically for a sunset audit was once every 10 years. In more recent years, it's been more one of 8 years. The current voting, the last couple of sessions, has been one of 6 years. You will notice with legislation just introduced last week that we were recommended only for 2-year extension for the board. The other board who had that same decision in the joint meeting was the dental board. Now, practically speaking, just so you understand what that translates into your large staffing ratio for the state board, is that we will be working continuously with the Auditor General about the next 2 to 4 years because the process will begin over again in 24 months. We are providing our 6-month report at the end of this month. We will have them back for an 18-month review. And then by the time the 18-month review and response is done, we start the process over. So the Auditor General will be active partners with us for the next 4 years with all of the compliance requirements. The next stage for the board is to appear before the JLAC committee. We don't have a date on that yet. The Joint Legislative Audit Committee will be the next place that we'll be presenting, and that will be subsequent to the 6-month report. I think, unless you have any questions on that issue, I think I'll move on. Let's do C last. On D, we are moving ahead with the database conversion with Ventia. It is on schedule from their standpoint and certainly our standpoint, but it's just beginning. They are under a deadline of full operational ability by July the 1st. Their deadline for conversion is spring of this year, and we're on schedule for that. I would say late spring, probably very early summer is a more realistic date. On E, and we've chatted about this on several occasions, but I'll just cut to the chase. We got no new money, and we got no new FTEs for the State Massage Board. Now, under the Executive Budget Office submission that the board provided in the fall of last year, there was a consensus, I think, for general support for the 3 new FTEs that we've requested, 2 of which had been planned for licensing, if granted, and the last was for investigations, reminding everyone here that the board had a lot more staff in the past. specifically three investigators, two of which were in the field, than what the current staffing ratio is. And you've heard me say this many times, but, you know, you have basically three people and myself for an active licensing database of between 10 and 12,000 and a full database of roughly 30,000. So the algorithm has not changed. And in fact, we will not have the ability to get a new request in to request those FTEs and have it reviewed with the earliest new monies being available, July 1st of 2024. And I just would remind the board again, the risk of being obnoxious, that we have a fund balance in excess of $1.3 million. So we're not asking for money. We're not asking for a licensing fee increase. We're asking for the access to our funds, which are paid entirely by the industry by their licensing fees. And as I've also said before, but I'm in a rant mode now, so forgive me, but you know, you can go to a farmer's market and buy a bottle of honey, and before you step away from the vendor, you'll have an electronic receipt of your purchase paid for with a credit card. Now, the good news in the last year, we got the credit card ability back up, so we're not still doing only money orders and cashier's checks and things like that. So I suppose that's some type of progress, but relief will not be coming to the board or the ability to review the legitimacy of the request for relief until the next budget cycle with access to monies on until 2024. We're not the only board in this position. Other boards have had the same decision made. And it's perhaps more part and parcel to the transition between administrations, if that provides any explanation for you. I heard, Madam Chair, somebody had a question. You have a question, Madam Chair?
Oh, yeah, yes, I do. So I just want some clarification just in case, so for not only the board members, but people of the public and the press, just in case. So with our audit report and all of the dings that we got on our audit report, and our board previously had three investigators, two in the field, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How many FTEs did we have in the office for license processing, answering phones, all of that good stuff?
Madam Chair, board members, you're authorized for five FTEs. You currently have four FTEs. And one of the practical problems of being a manager in state government is that to attract employees, to retain employees, and to keep them for career dedication, guess what? All requires money. Without getting into too much unnecessary detail, when the investigator retired under the last board and we hired a new investigator, to his enormous credit, he took a lateral to leave the nursing board to come to the state massage board. So for the pure delight of your company and mine, Mr. Elson is making the same salary that he made when he left the nursing board now, I believe going on 2 years ago. So we have utilized the funding in the fifth FTE to pay for ERE and personnel expenses currently. So we just don't have the money to hire the fifth vacancy.
Sure. And one of the things that was in our audit report was that we are unable to take phone calls from people at our board. So we don't have anybody to answer the phone.
Madam Chair, that has been corrected, and I don't want to give a spoiler alert to the Auditor General if they're listening in, but in the report that we'll be filing next week, we have responded to every single one of their recommendations, and we do now have telephone capacity back again. The number's been up on the website for about 10 days, and it's using technology to basically take the call, provide the audio record, a written record. We're in the process of having the call returned by technology, and then it's being added to the info box as well. So we do have the ability now to take a call and the option to return it either as an email or as a telephone call. So we have to really respond in good faith to the recommendations of the Auditor General. So that was the reason for putting the phone number back up and providing telephone access, even if it's on a recorded delayed basis.
Of course. So in a nutshell, our board, and probably other boards as well, are expected to perform as they were previously with more staff, with less staff now, and no additional funding. We're expected to protect the public and do our jobs without additional funding for FTEs.
Madam Chair, board members, let me, I guess, try to provide a defense for your observation on behalf of the legislature and others. With the legislature's approval of the CENTIA database software, the state of Arizona used to be on paper licensing, which is in the lifetime memory of many of you on the board and certainly the staff. And from that, it went to digital. And the digital, which the public and the LMPs had access to, it's a bit of a misnomer. It's not really digital. When an LMP applicant or someone doing renewal files a form to our one person that does licensing and the other gentleman who does the key punch, everything is still manual. There is no automation at all in the current database, which was designed in 2010 to provide for the applicant to be able to upload information. So in defense of those who would not fund additional FTEs, the bet now is going to pure technology where the applicant will take on more of a role of content enforcement, what they submit to the board, and the relating to software and the bots that work in there and so forth, as opposed to staff. And then staff will get involved when everything has been completed and vetted by technology. And you're seeing some of that right now with the Adobe software. So people that are renewing, they're saying, oh, I have to attach my continuing education certificates. That's now a function of technology, which then provides the information to the board. So the thinking, perhaps, to give the benefit of the doubt, is that the new technology may forestall the need for additional licensing staff. Now, the issue of investigations, what constitutes credible investigations, the absence of a field investigator, I think, speaks for itself. And when you have a desk investigator primarily involved with interfacing with technology and on the telephone with the complainant and the respondents, again, I go back to, I just don't think a 10,000 to 12,000 licensing database is adequately staffed for investigations with a single FTE. It's like a fire truck. The fire truck goes out with three people. It goes back to the station house. There's a 24-hour shift, so that's another three and another three. And then they have to factor in for sick leave and annual leave and jury duty and so forth. At some point, a 90-10 board that's able to provide its own financial funding is not providing a credible algorithm for the people it's attempting to serve. So it's a long way of answering your question, but I'm attempting to lobby the audience as well. So,
no, I do appreciate that, Tom. I wanted to make sure that it was clarified for those who are on the call, as you know, our board is continuously perceived in a certain way, and I want the public to know that our board does do the very best it can with the resources it has. Mr. Tapscott, you have your hand up, and then Mariah.
Thank you very much. Executive Director Augerton, I realize I'm asking for opinion, but I think you're in a perfectly poised position to give one. You said we're down two field investigators, so 66% of our investigating staff. Does this pose a threat to the public that we are underfunded and understaffed?
Madam Chair, Mr. Tapscott, well, you ask a really great leading question, because when we submit our request for additional monies, we've actually never used that argument before. And that may be an oversight on our part, because it's not just servicing we're trying to provide improvement for. We're trying to provide enforcement after the board holds administrative hearings and gives a decision. So I might steal that language from you on that go around.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to go on record that I hear lots of talk about caring about public safety, and that requires staff and funding and putting our money where our mouth is. And I also very much believe in serving the massage therapists that we are trying to process as well. But anyway, you can't say one thing and not fund it. if we really care about that. So thank you very much.
I agree. I agree 100%. Ms. Moon, Vice Chair Moon.
Thank you. Just two quick questions, one clarifying question. You, Tom, you said that you guys are funding ERE with the fifth position. Why? I've never heard of a salary or FTE that wouldn't be supported or ERE wouldn't be part of that FTE.
Madam Chair, board members, board member Moon, we have to provide a salary that was several thousand, $12,000 more than the predecessor to get this investigator.
Tom, yeah. I just want to make sure that we're not talking about specifics of any employees right now.
Okay. I apologize. I was trying to answer.
So
the
it wasn't. So I'll restate to remove people. So it's not specifically to ERE.
Madam Chair, Ms. Moon, well, ERE and personnel costs have gone up since the funding was provided initially for the five FTEs. So the funding for the fifth FTE has been used for other board functions, including new personnel.
Okay. And then my second question is there, do we really have to fit until 12 months, is there any curveball, any thought or suggestion, any plea that we could possibly support to figure out how we can get a fuller staff before next session?
Madam Chair, board members, you know, the state of Arizona uses a very detailed process involving the budget office of the executive branch and the budget office of the legislature, the GLBC. And it always begins a year ahead, and there's a lot of detailed analysis and a lot of process that goes through. I mean, there is an answer to your question that says that the appropriations process provides the opportunity for the legislative committees and subcommittees and members to have flexibility in their decision-making. But the official recommendation from the new governor and the recommendation from the JLBC will not be inclusive of new FTEs for the board. And that would be the type of conversation that would have to be held on a one-on-one basis with majority staff and minority staff and maybe some of the members of the approach committee or leadership. But it should never begin unless there was prior discussion and approval from the executive branch. And we're kind of in an unusual period right now because the numbers were formulated under the previous governor and they were submitted and the new governor arrived and is looking carefully at the numbers that were prepared by a previous submission. And I think the decision was made that they want to review that with their own priorities in mind. So, you know, there's always a process for what you're asking rhetorically, but I think the process is detail-oriented and very sequential. And it would be a great casual discussion for board members to have with their own representatives, but I don't think it would be terribly productive, perhaps, in a mid-first session of a new legislature and a new executive branch.
Can I add to that? Because you got to help me out a little bit, Tom, of understanding all of what you just said. What would be, or can staff put in place the routes for us to be prepared to champion more funding for us? Whether it's tomorrow, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, can we have really clear, tangible actions that we can do as a board to continue to champion this cause?
Madam Chair, board members, I can give you a methodology of who the decision makers are in the process, and each of you, if you haven't, you should have received your new green book from the state legislature, which has the bios and the numbers. If you haven't gotten that yet, then it's in transition to you. But, and I do report to you, but I also report to the executive branch, and it would not be prudent or, you know, to, I have to tell you the process to your question. Help me out here, Seamus. But,
I think that's something that board staff would want to look into and get back to you on. I don't think that's something that they want to answer right now.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure that all of us might be interested in you know, kind of like a bulletproof out, or, you know, bulleted outline of what that looks like. Because I think we're all interested in, you know, trying to move forward. But knowing exactly how to do it is, and where to start.
Madam Chair, board members, I just hope you don't show up on the Capitol Mall with your draping sheets. That's a protest.
I know, I kind of opened, I may have opened up a can of worms, and I was fully, I am fully prepared to accept the consequences of my questions, you know, for anybody who might be not very pleased with the questions that I've asked.
Okay, I think that concludes item number E, Madam Chair, board members, unless you have another question. And then the last item is C, House Bill 2172, Massage Therapy Communication Proficiency, is a repeal of the language on TOEFL and TOEIC by Representative Longton, who we worked with last year. We are in consultation with her House research staff to see if we can add some additional language to the bill, but is there anybody here who'd like to offer any background on 2172?
So my only understanding of this particular bill is that it is to eliminate the TOEFL and TOEIC from the Arizona requirement. I'm not sure that I'm in full support of rescinding that from the legislation unless there is a replacement of MLEX.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I'm not sure how those two different requirements equate, meaning I don't know how an English language requirement relates to an MLEX requirement or how one supports the other. My concern all along, obviously, as everybody knows, is that I think it's an unconstitutional requirement. It actually possibly even hurts the safety of the public, as many of our public needs people that speak their native language and such when receiving massage.
Well, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
I think that's it. I guess my other concern too is I have many native speaking English students who could not pass the English. They read at a fourth grade level because of a learning disability or something. So it seems like a very uneven requirement. And we don't see cases in front of the massage board where this has endangered the public. What we see is, unfortunately, egregious conduct from people that are fully proficient in the language. So that's it.
Respectfully, I disagree with you, Board Member Jeff Scott, because I do see that, you know, a lot of people seeking reciprocity licenses who are unable to speak language, English language. And in my opinion, I believe that in order to be regulated by our massage therapy board and our investigators speaking English, that it's very difficult to regulate somebody who cannot speak English language. For instance, you know, somebody has a case and Mr. Elson needs to ask somebody questions and they can't speak English, that poses a problem. Another problem is in the unfortunate event that there might be an emergency service required where 911 needs to be called. Generally, those conversations with 911 operators are happening in English as well. So those are my two concerns. You know, as far as replacing or adding MLEX, I think there's just another our state, we require other states to include MLEX in theirs, but we don't expect that from our own. And I think just to level the playing field across the board, to have those same expectations from our own licenses.
Yeah, absolutely. Chairperson Ryder, please don't misunderstand me either. I'm not suggesting anything about the MLEX. I mean, I'm not saying, I just don't see how one supports the other, but I'm not saying we should or shouldn't have an MLEX. But you make a very good you make a very good argument both sides, by the way, for both things. I just think they're separate issues in a way. I understand they're all licensing issues, but I just meant one's an English language requirement, one's kind of like massage knowledge over here.
Sure. Trying to take advantage of the fact that this is a proposed legislation and kind of killing two birds with one stone, maybe?
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I don't blame you for injecting your agenda as I am.
Ms. Moon.
I guess I want to make sure that I'm clear as far as my singular feelings towards why we have this is because it is a safety matter of mitigating or working within how we respond for human trafficking within massage parlors. So I would love for that to be kind of in at least the conversation. In honor that if this is being proposed to be removed, then there should be accountability from ourselves, from experts in the field of if we're going to take away this mitigator, then what's our justification? What's our response specifically to human trafficking? I do respectfully disagree. I think you can exist within the world without knowing English or English being your second language as far as responding, communication. There are many ways that we can communicate now, so that is not my stance. My stance is we're removing something that is a protective safety mitigator, and we need to hold everyone responsible of what would then replace it.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Mr. Roof?
Yeah, thank you. I agree with that. And this has come up for me before. I think I struggle that we're using a language test to solve a bigger problem, to Mariah's point. We're not actually addressing the problem. We're kind of hindering people, to Mr. Tapscott's point, who maybe aren't able to pass that test and do massage therapy. But really, we're almost using it to mitigate human trafficking instead of addressing the actual problem, which I think is not necessarily language, but I think that that's all we have right now, and that's a problem for me.
Absolutely. Mr. Tapscott?
I really appreciate this discussion because it shows how nuanced this is, and I think how we all want people to be safe and honored, and I appreciate that. Yeah, that's been my concern. Is by the way, I don't know that we've ever established that it actually works to do what we want it to do. Right? I even worry, does it keep people out of legitimate work and force them into illegal work because they can't get a license because they don't meet the language requirement? But I don't know that either. We don't have any evidence. And then there's the whole reciprocity issue and universal licensing that allows them to jump in front of the whole thing anyway. And so you start to, you know, yes. Anyway, thank you. I'm rambling at this point, but I do appreciate everybody's point. And agree with you all, really.
Thank you. Vice Chair Moon?
I have one more comment. I struggle with, again, the position of removing something with the justification of does it really work when we struggle with our system response to dealing with human trafficking, whether it's prosecution, victim-centered approach, holding perpetrators accountable. We don't trend, and we haven't been trending towards a lot of success rates. That doesn't mean that we should pull away from them. Without comprehensive acknowledgement of we got to try something else, but the system in place, it's unfortunate we don't have a lot of successful prosecutions in the field of human trafficking. That doesn't mean that we should pull those safety pillars away. We just have to be adapting and open to acknowledging that this is a nuanced issue, as was suggested before. And if we're going to pull something away, then we have to replace it with something else.
Thank you. I am curious if other boards, not only in Arizona, but across the United States, have this requirement, and does it work? I don't know if that's information that's available to us, or maybe Investigator David Elson, do you have any insight on other boards that might be using TOEFL and TOEIC, at least in the state of Arizona, or what the requirements are federally?
No, I don't have any massage board. I mean, we can check into it over the course of the next month, but I do know that, like, the nursing board requires it, if you're out, if you went to school outside of the country, they require TOEFL and TOEIC.
Okay. So outside of the country.
Okay. Right.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's certainly something that we can all consider. You know, this isn't our bill, but eventually we will be asked to either support or not support or not have a stance.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Let me take a couple of minutes of the board's time if I could. The way the legislative process works is you can read the statutory language, obviously, in the ARS, but besides the actual language of the law, there's something called legislative intent. And if you speak to the scholars over at Ledge Council or you can talk to the attorneys at the AG's office, they will give you the difference between legislative intent and what was actually approved by the full legislature and signed by the governor into law. And sometimes there is a difference. But legislative intent is the starting place for when someone wants to change the law. The second requirement, I think that's commonly accepted at the Capitol, is transparency. If you or a group or anyone want to change the law, you're obligated to indicate who you are, why you want the change, and who you're doing the change for. And it's just comforting that the board, the second year in a row, is involved with legislation that it did not know about from the sponsor or from staff prior to the start of the session, when in fact the original legislative intent was some type of English ability before a state license was issued. Now, the perpetual fascination with this industry and our Title 32 of authority is that what is intended versus what is actually the case are often two different things. On TOEFL and TOEIC, it's almost a non-starter because of universal licensing and reciprocity, which enables an individual to apply for an Arizona state license without speaking a word of English, because those two things are exempted. They were calibrated to be exempted. If you look at universal, pretty much all you need is a pulse. So again, it might be helpful at some point to take an honest look at Arizona's application form and then begin looking at all the exceptions backwards that the board has experienced since 2003. One of the things we were written up by the Auditor General was not having the disciplines more than 5 years old on our list, on the website, because that was the result of legislation 2 years ago. Then there was an exception for felonies that was put through a couple of years ago. Basically, if you go to 2003, the start of the board, and work your way backwards to 2023, and you look at all the statutory changes that have been made, TOEFL and TOEIC, even if it is applied, is taken by test takers, paid for by organized efforts. So, you know, the unfortunate thing on this particular bill is that it did not include the board during the pre-session for discussion and vetting, and some expertise, certainly on the part of our two industry members. And it didn't, well, it was not proposed in conjunction with other deficiencies in our statutes that make Arizona a daily place for human trafficking, prostitution, money laundering, and all the other ills are routine. And I will get off this now because the attorney will remind me this is not theoretically scheduled for discussion. We could do this at the next meeting. But with the advent of interstate compacts, which the board has the support of passively, the problem is further corrosion. Forget the resource issue. How about the statutory oversight issue? Public protection is perceptual unless you can point to progress. And again, and I'll end on this, but the blue light bulbs on the copper dome across the street are an odd contrast to the applicants in the lobby of the board's building who are here on temporary visas, do not speak English, and never took an hour in massage training school. That paradox has always been very visible. Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Auberton. Moving on to the next item of our agenda, discussion and possible board action items for future state meeting agendas. I'm expecting to hear some things from you guys today. I absolutely, on our next agenda, would like to review our state application. line by line, if we could maybe even have them in a presentation and go over them and see if there's anything that potentially could be updated, you know, word-wise.
Board Member Tapscott, I second the motion to put that on the agenda and go over the application line by line, I think even just for our own edification.
What other items would we like to add to the next agenda?
This Board Member Tapscott, I'd love to add the two-year expiration date to the agenda, really just to discuss it and add clarity for the public.
And that was to discuss possibly moving it to issue date from birthday. Is that what you wanted to discuss?
I want to discuss anything that entails, yes, possibly moving from issue date to birth date or vice versa, from birthday to issue date, I should say. Sorry, the way
sure.
It's going. And really just to give whatever is, anyway, to discuss the issue and give clarity to the public. Yeah.
Very general discussion. Okay.
Yes.
Perfect.
Okay. I know there was something else that we wanted to add, I think. I'm leaning on you guys to refresh my memory because there was something else.
I have another item for discussion, which is I think Ms. Cordero, who presented at the beginning, brought up persons submitting applications, having a confirmation, and then the paperwork's missing. I just wanted to do is bring up for discussion to let the public know what they should do in those situations. If you have a confirmation of that, do you resubmit the confirmation? Do you not? Those kind of things. I think a lot of these discussions are just very helpful for edifying the public.
Sure.
And I don't know the answer.
And then, of course, we'll all board staff homework before the next agenda regarding voluntary certification versus licensing. And maybe reaching out directly to California, someone in California that has jurisdiction on this topic, to enlighten us a bit more would be greatly appreciated. And then if there's a way that we can get that information before our next meeting as, board members, so that we can, read up on it and understand it before we review those other cases, that would be that would be amazing. Any other items for the next board meeting?
I would like in either for the next one or in March, because it seems like we have a long list in February, to keep our foot on the pedal for human trafficking. I think we heard some educational points from Dominique a few months ago. I think we heard some counter suggestions from another presenter. I would love for a Arizona expert to come in to, you know, we've been educated or informed, whether it's a lack of better terms assessment or recommendations or ideas of how this board can continue to engage in responding appropriately and continue that journey. I think it's too little just to sit on information. I think we need to be more engaged on what we're currently doing and if it's how it's helping and are we doing it in a coordinated response to all the other disciplines within responding to human trafficking in the state.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to add that to the agenda as well for discussion. Anything else? All right. Our next monthly state board meeting date is Monday, February 27th, 2023, 9 a.m. to be held digitally. Board members and board staff, I appreciate you greatly. Welcome to the new year, and let's go out there and do some good things. This meeting is adjourned.